Good morning and welcome to African Perspective on CHRY 105.5 in Toronto. And today we're going to have a special focus on events developing in the West African country of Burkina Faso. As you may have heard recently, there have been some upheaval and a popular insurrection that have toppled the regime of Blaise Compaoré, who used to be the president of that country for the last 27 years. So through this popular revolt, they managed finally to make him run away. And then as we speak, the situation is still unfolding. It is not still clear how the transition will be happening. So I'm going to have today an exclusive focus on Burkina Faso with two important interviews. The first one will be with an author, Ernest Hash, author of a recently published book called Thomas Sankara, an African Revolutionary. Ernest Hash is a research scholar at the Institute of African Studies at Columbia University. He worked on African issues at the United Nations for more than 20 years and is the author of South Africa, White Rule, Black Revolt. He recently published, this month, the first English language book to tell the story of Thomas Sankara's life and struggles, drawing on his extensive first-hand research and reporting on Burkina Faso, including interviews with the late leader Thomas Sankara. Decades after his death, Sankara remains an inspiration to young people throughout Africa for his integrity, idealism, and dedication to independence and self-determination. So that's going to be our first interview. And the second interview, we'll be talking with Aziz Fall, who is the coordinator of the committee, International Committee Justice for Thomas Sankara. He's a Pan-Africanist, well-known Pan-Africanist, based here in Montreal in Canada. And we will have him to help us go through the different events that are taking place in the country and also what the fall of Blaise Compaoré means in terms of the process seeking to redress the injustice connected to the assassination of Thomas Sankara 27 years ago, along with 12 of his comrades, but more largely to the atmosphere of impunity that have been devastating this country for the last 27 years. And I am on the line with my first guest I just introduced a couple of minutes ago, Ernest Hash, author of the recently published book Thomas Sankara, an African Revolutionary. Ernest, can you hear me properly?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you for being with us today, and thanks for accepting our invitation. I would like to go through with you a little bit about this book. Can you tell us start by telling us what's the motivation about writing this book 27 years after the assassination of Thomas Sankara? What was the driving force behind this initiative?
Well, I had been writing about Sankara for many years, usually in news outlets and some academic publications. Around the time of the 25th anniversary of his death, that was a couple years ago, it occurred to me that looking around Africa and around the rest of the world, that there are still many young people, especially activists, who were drawn to his ideas and to his legacy and to his image. So I started trying to explore more in a focused way why that is. What was it about Sankara's experience and example that has had such a lasting impact? So I wrote an academic journal article about that. The publisher of the book, Ohio University Press, was doing a series of short histories of Africa, and they approached me about doing a brief biography of Thomas Sankara. So that seemed like a great occasion to jump back and give some of my impressions, some of my research that I'd gathered from the time of the Burkina Revolution back in 1983 to 87, and to give a snapshot of who Sankara was, what examples he set. And I particularly had in mind an English-speaking readership. As you know, Burkina Faso is a Francophone country, and while there's a very good biography of Sankara in French, written by Bruno Joffre, the only thing in English of any substance was a collection of Sankara's speeches called Thomas Sankara Speaks, which is a very good collection, but, you know, you put speeches on paper and things come off a bit dry.
Right. And
you don't have the connective tissue to put it in context. So I jumped at the opportunity to write this book, which is actually, it's quite short, and I wrote it as a popular account, because I was a journalist, to make it very readable. So it's coming out this week, or next week. The first copies are now out. I don't know if it's in bookstores yet, but it can be ordered online.
Right, right. Now, what were your impressions about the character of Thomas Sankara? Because I know that you followed what was taking place in the 80s when he was in power. What can you tell to the audience why Thomas Sankara is still very relevant today and why people should be looking at what he attempted to do in Burkina Faso with his comrades?
Well, part of it's the impact of him as an individual in Burkina, and on people abroad who met him. I mean, he was a very uncharacteristic head of state. Very direct, very forceful. You know, he laughed a lot. He made jokes. He loved to do, you know, puns in French, of course, but, you know, he loved to play with words. He was extremely bright. When you met with him and talked with him, he was very direct. You know, he'd look you in the eye, engage with you, listen to what you had to say. So he impressed everybody who met him. Within Burkina, you know, he was uncharacteristic partly because he did what he said he would do, unlike most previous politicians and, you know, the one who came after Blaise Compaoré,
right,
who promised to improve people's conditions. He very quickly did that, mobilizing people to build schools, health clinics, water retention reservoirs, and so on to improve agriculture. And he also very quickly put in jail through People's Revolutionary Tribunals, corrupt bureaucrats and army officers who had been looting the country's wealth. Mm. And this is a poor country. The wealth was not great. So you take a little bit and it really hurts. It takes money away from development, from investment, and so on. So he actually put hundreds of these bureaucrats in prison for short periods of time, and seized some of their assets. So that impressed many Burkina Bay. He was overthrown, and I happened to be in Burkina when that happened in October 1987. That's more than 27 years ago now. People were shocked. Mm-hmm. They were shocked. I mean, Compaoré was a very unpopular new head of state, but he was a wily political survivor. He used repression and co-optation to stay in power all these years. Mm-hmm. But partly people's reaction today is, I think, partly the memory. But it's not just the memory, it's the historical image that's been handed down, because many young people come out for the annual commemorations for Sankara. They weren't alive or weren't very old when Sankara was in power. So it's what they've learned and heard about him. But it's also, for young activists, it's their reaction to the repression, the looting of the Compaoré regime. Which is what motivated them just a few days ago to rise up, hundreds of thousands in the capital, and forced him to resign and flee the country.
Right.
Among those activists, you find people who call themselves Sankarists, mm-hmm. You know, supporters of Sankara's ideals. You see photos of demonstrations, you know, protesters with Sankara T-shirts or carrying portraits of Sankara. Some of the opposition leaders were active in the days of Sankara's revolution, and are known to have been that. It's interesting to me, the main opposition coalition, which includes, you know, some moderate and conservative political figures, they've signed a number of their statements with the slogan La Patria ou la Mort, Nous Vaincons,
yes,
you know, which was the slogan of Sankara's revolution,
because
mm-hmm. they're appealing to the youthful crowds.
Right, right. And then now, I'm sure you've been following very closely the situation developing with the fall of Blaise Compaoré in the last couple of days. We have one more minute to go. What are your impressions, and what do you think might be where the country might be moving forward?
That's a little bit hard to say. As you know, some army officers have sort of assumed the leadership. Partly sections of the protesting crowds called on the army to do that, although not necessarily to form a military regime. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants a transition. Right. They want new elections to be held, open and free, where the true sentiments of the people's voters can be expressed without all the rigging and the, you know, money politics that characterize elections under Compaoré. Just this morning, there were demonstrations by thousands in Ouagadougou demanding that the army step aside and that they allow a civilian-led democratic transition to come in. But it's hard to say. The army leadership seems divided. The opposition seems a little bit unsure of how to press. But the optimistic part of it is such an enormous sentiment was unleashed in recent days. And the demonstrations in Ouagadougou, I look at protests across sub-Saharan Africa, North Africa as well. These are truly on a scale that hasn't been seen very often, certainly not in recent years. Only a handful of countries, Egypt, Tunisia, maybe Madagascar, you know, have had hundreds of thousands in the streets, maybe up to 1 million at one time. And that power organized in the streets, partly, you know, it's a legacy of the spirit of Sankara, who believed in popular mobilization.
Right, right.
And encouraged people to mobilize and organize.
Absolutely.
So that gives a hopeful note, I think.
Absolutely. I would like to thank you very much for your input for today, and we look forward for the book. And I will give the information to our listeners. They can most likely find it in the library very shortly. And thanks for your contribution today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Ernest Hash, who has been the author of a new book that just came out called Thomas Sankara and African Revolution, Revolutionary. And we're going to take the ads right now, and then we will come back. We have more discussion about what's going on in that country, West Africa, the country of Thomas Sankara. As you may remember, 2 weeks ago I played here during our fundraising drive a speech that was given by Thomas Sankara in Harlem in 1986 or 85, when he talks about very strongly about the kind of new leadership that African people needed. So stay tuned for more discussion about the recent development in Burkina Faso. You are listening to Amanla, an African Perspective on CHRY 105.5 here in New York University campus of Toronto. And as I mentioned earlier during my introduction, today we're going to have a special focus on what's happening in Burkina Faso. And my next guest today is Aziz Fall, who is the coordinator of the International Campaign Justice for Sankara, whose objective was to pressure the government of Burkina Faso to investigate the assassination of its former president, Thomas Sankara, who ruled the West African nation from 1984 to 1987. Heralded around the world as a proponent of daring and profound change in Burkina Faso and across the African continent, Sankara's brief but remarkably effective presidency was brought to an abrupt end by an assassin's bullet on October 15, 1987. A dozen members of his government were also killed by his side. Their death prompted an international outcry, but were never investigated. Sankara's widow, Mariam Sankara, and his two sons never abandoned their call to the international community to take action to bring his assassins to justice. In 1997, the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa, GRILA, answered that call by creating an international team of 22 lawyers to put together a case for a full investigation of the murder. The government of Burkina Faso, under the presidency of Blaise Compaoré, have been marked by a highly compromised judicial system that blocked all efforts by the campaign to bring the case to court. 2 days ago, the people of Burkina Faso, through a popular insurrection, managed to topple the regime of Compaoré, who managed to flee the country and seem to be hiding, as we speak, in Yamoussoukro in Ivory Coast. To speak about this new perspective opened up by this new situation for both the International Campaign Justice for Sankara, but also for Burkina Faso and Africa, we have on the line Aziz Fall joining us from Montreal. Aziz, can you hear us properly?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being with us today. And before we get to the campaign, maybe just try to bring us up to date on what's have been developing in the country in Burkina Faso the last couple of days and where we are at least as we speak now.
Well, in the last minutes, people from the civil society gathered in the national place have tried to put in place a civilian power instead of the military one that was chosen yesterday night, had by the Lieutenant Colonel Zida, who apparently was the second choice after the first head of state, the army chief, Honoré. So basically what we are seeing now is a kind of fight that is very normal in this country. As we know, the military have too disturbed the political life of this country. We know that they should cede power to political and civic order. The army and its components are fighting a transition that must not only take place peacefully, but must allow the organization of free and transparent election. And that's what the people in the street are still asking for. We have to also say that the very same people who destroyed the radio and the parliament were cleaning the city today, showing great citizenship spirit. So we salute the courage of the people of Burkina Faso and the memory of those who have fallen for this freedom. But we also have to say that this regime was and still is the pillar of France-Afrique in the region. You probably know that it was the centerpiece of France-Afrique, of NATO, of AFRICOM. The Compaoré regime has long destabilized the country and all the social forces of the region. It helped to depossess and selling off natural resources to rich swaths of oligarchic power in the world. So this system keeps track a large capacity for harm and is still very dangerous, partly because he seeks asylum in the neighboring country, Ivory Coast, where he has helped topple the Gbagbo regime and install the Ouattara regime. So the story is not over. The struggle is not over yet.
Right. Now, so some people have been raising the risk of having the Egyptian scenario where the popular revolt might get hijacked by the military from its natural course. Any risk or any justification for being nervous about what the military might be doing next?
Well, often in Africa, as you know, we witness this type of situation, but we also have to say that in Mali or in Tunisia, we had witnessed similar transitions where finally civilian got to power. So in Burkina Faso, it is indeed true that the military had dominated the political life for, more than 30 years. So it is quite normal to witness, as in Egypt, their grip on the power. But I think the resistance of the population this time is certainly an asset for all the democratic forces.
Right. I remind people that I'm in discussion with Aziz Fall, who is the coordinator of the International Campaign Justice for Thomas Sankara, who also is a producer of a video called AFRICOM Go Home. And that's a video that's looking at the security question in Africa and the involvement of foreign military forces like from the US and France. Now, you mentioned very briefly that Burkina Faso has been a key ally of NATO, the US and France together. What this removal of Compaoré might mean in terms of the foreign policy of those countries? Will they try to reposition themselves to try to push for the maintenance of the status quo? What's your analysis on that?
Well, I guess as it is shown in that movie that you mentioned, AFRICOM Go Home, Burkina Faso is host of one of the AFRICOM bases and also very central in the so-called fight against terror in the Sahelian region. So it is is very likely that the NATO countries would make sure that any power taking place in that centerpiece corner of the Sahelian region will follow their willingness to pursue the imperialist goals. Having said that, it is also very clear for us that the fight against impunity is at stake, because as you probably mentioned in the beginning of the show, we've been, after 18 years with this network of lawyers, expecting to translate into reality the historic decision of the Human Rights Committee of the UN system. To remind the people, we are still requesting exhumation of the grave of Sankara and to have a clear understanding of what really happened. So we call on the forces of Liberia, Sierra Leone, Togo, Ivory Coast, France, and United States to redouble their effort to open their national archives and loosen Tong. We must turn once for all the pages of impunity. You also know that that was the only remaining revolution in Africa. Probably what happened in the so-called spring in the Maghreb was not yet a revolution. So the Sankara episode was truly the last revolution on the continent. So its assassination was made on purpose to, you know, as this bloody end to one of the Africa's last revolutionary experience was a lesson for all the region. You also know that, as it was in the beginning, his death certificate cites natural causes at the same time as 12 other people, and no explanation yet was ever given to what happened. And 2 years ago, his burial site was destroyed, and we still don't know even if that is his burial site. But we have exhausted all the legal channels in Burkina Faso, and we went back to this forensic demand that we are still asking. So the willingness of the Françafrique system, the neighboring country, to help knowing what really happened, this was a huge plot led by the CIA, the French Service, Charles Taylor, Houphouët Boigny of the time, and Compaoré, for us show that it is actually going to be a very tricky process, but I think the willingness of the people to reconcile and to start a new page is going to prevail.
Now, in terms of the international campaign itself, with this the fall of Compaoré, what are the new perspectives that this new situation opens up, and what are the demands of the family of the President Sankara at this point in time in terms of what needs to happen to bring back justice to Sankara and his comrades that were killed in 1987?
Well, Ms. Sankara, Mariam Sankara, is about to release in a couple of minutes a press release stating her position, but as I've seen some of the draft, the demands are still the same. They are based on reconciliation and justice. They are still begging from the judiciary to have a fair trial, to just explain really what happened. They always have refused the money that was given and so on. Yet again, the problem of the judicial system in Burkina Faso is that it was totally controlled by the Compaoré regime, so we will expect that now they will finally agree on the inquiry that was asked by the population and the family, and that a new page would be finally turned. But having said that, we know it is going to be something very complicated, because the truce is not accepted by the actual Françafrique and the neighboring countries, nor by the members of this very same regime. So we have also to say that the Burkina Faso regime, state and population are very peculiar. This is not the first upheaval. Like he did in the first light of independence against the grotesque regime of Yameogo, the people of Burkina Faso awakened from the torpor by the tampering of the Article 37 of the Constitution, has swelled the ranks of those who have stood for 27 years against the Compaoré regime and Françafrique. So in the past 27 years, it was mainly some Sankarist force, some resistant who escaped from exile or from the pressure of the regime who have resisted. And we always have to salute the courage of these very same people and salute the role of the brand new movement like the Ballet Citoyen, who have helped fuel this resistance in the past months and years. So we all know that we are on the right side of history, that these 18 years of trial are not over, and we hope that we will have the support of the population all over. Here in Canada, Canada has benefited a lot of this dispossession on the structural adjustment policies. The regime of Burkina Faso have helped to dispossess and selling off natural resources to rich swaths of oligarchic power in the world, including Canada. And we know that he was very powerfully supported, and we hope that all these people today will actually support our struggle.
Going back to the geostrategic issue in the region, everybody knows, as you mentioned, that Blaise Compaoré has been a centerpiece of almost of the major event that took place in that region, going back from the war in Sierra Leone, Liberia, with his association with Charles Taylor's, the removal of Laurent Gbagbo in Ivory Coast, the support giving to the Azawad movement in Mali. What does the fall of Compaoré today might have as an implication in the, at the regional level to, in those countries?
Well, truly, I'm still very upset by the fact that it may not necessarily change a lot, because we have seen that first when he was in power, or even before he was in power, he had this capacity to destroy all these social forces and even country like Liberia or Sierra Leone to just pillage with his friends most of these countries. And then after that, he was deeply supported. And it's interesting to see how the media and the diplomatic circles in the West have helped shape an image of wisdom and, you know, peaceful peacemaker in the sub-region, and they have helped build this image to replace Ivory Coast, Oufuè-Boigny, and Eyadema, and so on. So this, and you can even see it in the media today. It is not played the way it should have been played. It's a true revolution that is going on, and it is underplayed by this very same media in the West. So they would actually reduce the scope of what really happened, which is a real thunder in their own system. It's really the falling and important centerpiece of their system that now was destroyed. So you have now to see that these people are going to resist, first by trying to create turmoil within Ouagadougou itself, by trying to jeopardize the transition. And secondly, we have to look very carefully what really means the new power of Ouattara and Compaoré in the neighboring region that is already fragile. We know that Ivory Coast was sliced in two, Mali was sliced in two, most of the Sahelian region have deep problem provoked, as I've shown it by in the film, by this security policy dated from the neocon of the Pentagon and the CIA. So it is a very, very crucial period that we are now witnessing, and we deeply hope that this awakening of the African population, racist even in Ouagadougou, will spread, and that resistance against this recolonization is going to be strengthened.
Right. You mentioned the maneuver that are still going on, trying to derail maybe the revolutionary process going on right now. And we have witnessed the last couple of days maybe some slight differences of approach within the popular movement between the civil society organization like Badi Citoyen and some of the political forces, which might be understandable in terms of the complexity of the political situation that is changing to the minute. But I believe that it's important at this point of time to kind of maintain a block of unity of the popular movement. What is the international community, international committee might be playing? What role might they might be playing in terms of helping maintain a large unity between those different forces of the civil society organization and the political forces to make sure that there will not be any split or any split within the popular movement that will benefit the military or the international players that are maneuvering right now?
Well, truly, you know, the help of the so-called international community is always a double-edged problem. We hope that we will have an internationalist support, and we don't want this NGO or so-called NATO or international cooperation support on the long run, because we don't have lesson, you know, to learn from these very same people. The Burkina Faso itself have given a lesson to the rest of the world. This is now twice happening. First was during the Sankara experience. This experience embodied a self-directed Pan-African development, making a radical break with the previous disorder, but also from rigid cultural attitudes. It was a truly genuine popular support with the enthusiasm of the masses, a sense of sacrifices by the haves. In short, it was really an amazing process that the Sankara era opened. So not to say that people are nostalgic of this, but it showed that a country who have been able to create those conditions could certainly revive some of the good reflex, even though this generation that actually took the street have never witnessed the revolution. They are rooted in a system that had, let us say, the anticorps, you know, to react promptly against any external influence or attempt to derail the process. So people have to stay very vigilant. We know that the army and its components are fighting a transition, and this transition should allow the organization of free and transparent election. We know that the resistance forces must remain united to achieve these goals, particularly the Sankara's force, who must unite to ensure that the transition era gave birth to a democratic state accurately reflecting people's aspiration. And I must salute that 3 weeks ago, three of the Sankara's party have united as a united front. And this is already a beginning, and we have witnessed this during the Africa Social Forum in Dakar 3 weeks ago, where the spirit of Sankara was everywhere in the workshops and in the meetings. So, I mean, I'm quite optimistic despite of the level of complexity that the people of Burkina Faso will be very selective on the external influences that are going to happen in the next hours and days.
Just one more minute to go, and what would you suggest in terms of task or support that the international internationalist forces across the world, here and here in Canada, and also the Pan-Africanist movement spread across the world, can be, what role they should be playing right now to support this revolutionary process?
We call on all the forces that could help us open the national archives and loosen the tongs. We call on any support that could be given to the progressist forces, to the family who have witnessed all these killings. We are looking forward to say exactly what really happened during the past 30 years and to denounce the help that the Western countries have given to this Compaoré regime that should be totally isolated, and he should be in front of an international court or his own national court for all the crimes he had committed in the past 30 years.
Very clear. Thank you very much for being with us today, and we will continue to follow the situation very closely and then take it from there. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That was the Aziz Fall, who is the coordinator of the International Committee Justice for Thomas Sankara, who is based here in Montreal, in Canada, and has been coordinating this effort for the last 18 years with a group of 22 lawyers spread between Burkina Faso, France, Canada, and different countries. And as he mentioned, it is important that we stay vigilant in the face of what is happening right now in the country, and then we encourage all the progressive political forces within the country right now to maintain a certain level of unity, to not allow either the military to maneuver and then hijack the revolutionary process taking place right now, or the international forces like the NATO, the French, to derail this popular movement that has been happening in Burkina Faso for the last couple of weeks. So we will stay vigilant, and then we will keep monitoring the situation. It is time to play an ad, and I will come back to you with the last segment of the show.